Please.
My name is Scott Ware. I'm the editor of the Kitsap Sun, and it's my pleasure to welcome all of you here tonight for this first in a statewide series on open government. I want to thank Attorney General Rob McKenna and his staff for their commitment to this matter, one that is fundamental to its importance and one of the great strengths of our democracy. It was Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis who famously observed that in matters of governance, sunshine is the best disinfectant. Since then, citizens and the press alike have discovered many times not just the wonderful cleansing power of sunshine, but also the difficulty of predicting and counting on sunny weather. It's heartening to see such a healthy turnout here tonight on this beautiful sunny evening of citizens concerned with maintaining openness of government. We in the press rely on the various sunshine laws as one of the tools of our trade. We know how to use them. We know how to manage the costs involved, as burdensome as they sometimes can be. But it's equally important to recognize that these laws exist for all citizens, for groups and individuals who have a need to protect themselves against the excesses of government, to be able to participate fully in democracy and in the public decision-making process, and to hold their public officials accountable. Attorney General McKenna will preside over tonight's meeting. He was elected Washington's 17th Attorney General in November 2004 as the state's chief legal officer. He directs 460 attorneys and over 600 other employees providing legal services to state agencies, boards, and commissions. Previously, he had served on the Metropolitan King County Council, where he had served until winning the Attorney General's race. And since then, he has made one of his priorities strengthening the state's public disclosure laws and increasing government compliance. And during this past session, he was among those who fought to pass the new public strengthen the public disclosure law that we're discussing tonight. Please join me in welcoming Attorney General Rob McKenna.
Well, good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for turning out here and joining us on this beautiful evening. We chose this room because it lets in all the natural light and enjoy the evening. Of course, I guess since we have so many nights like this, it shouldn't be too much of a sacrifice to give up one of them, right? And we get three like this every year, whether we want them or not. So thank you very, very much for being here. We really appreciate it. I'd like to begin by thanking the Kitsap Sun and Scott and his colleagues for joining us as a partner to put on this forum. They've been a terrific partner to work with, and we know that tonight is going to set the standard for the rest of the state, in large part because of our opportunity to work with Scott and his colleagues at the newspaper. So Scott, thank you very much, and thanks to the Kitsap Sun. Really appreciate it. Introduce some people who are here with me from the Attorney General's office this evening. First of all, to my immediate right is Greg Overstreet. Greg is an attorney who is the co-author of the Washington State Bar Association desk book, or reference guide, if you will, on the State Public Disclosure Act. So Greg is one of the leading experts on the issue of the Public Disclosure Act and the underlying case law in the state. He came on board with me when I started at the office in early January of this year, and he is the public records ombudsman for my office. So he'll be available to us tonight as a resource to answer specific questions about requests and about the law, and to supplement the comments that Scott and I have in answer to your questions. We also have with us tonight Janelle Guthrie. Janelle is our media relations director and played a pivotal role in organizing this evening's event, reaching out to local government officials, to media, to citizens, and really helped really play a key role in putting this together tonight logistically. And then my executive assistant, Pam Hahn, is here tonight, right there, Pam. And Pam is also here to help make tonight go smoothly. So what I'd like to do is to talk to you about why we're doing this first, and then explain how this evening is going to operate. We're holding these forums, 12 of them all, around the state, because I believe that transparency and accountability are absolutely critical to public confidence in our government. Further, I believe that our sunshine laws, including the Public Disclosure Act and the Open Public Meetings Act, are central to that accountability and transparency. If we don't know what government is up to and we don't have access to the records that they create, it is much harder to have confidence in what our government is doing, and therefore we're going to have more conflict than it's really ideal. On the one hand, we have citizens for whom requesting documents is important because of issues they're researching. We have local and state government agencies that try to comply with those requests but have their own frustrations from time to time with how we operate under the Act, and I'm sure we're going to hear tonight about some of the costs that are very real to complying with the Public Disclosure Act. So we're going to hear, on the one hand, the requester's point of view, and on the other hand, the point of view of agencies that try to comply with those requests. Our goal at the Attorney General's office is for all concerned to be more successful in operating under the Public Disclosure Act. I've talked about creating a culture of compliance within government, compliance, successful compliance with the Public Disclosure Act and the Open Public Meetings Act. And I've talked about how we can work with government agencies to help this process be more efficient and more effective. Sometimes there are abusive and harassing requests. Fortunately, those are relatively rare, but they do happen. So what can we do to address those real issues that are brought to us by local and state agencies? Now, we've been working on this problem in two ways. Number one, my office wrote a bill that became a law, that updates and improves the Public Disclosure Act. It was in response to two Supreme Court cases from 2004, which I believe weakened the Public Disclosure Act significantly. So we wrote this bill to strengthen the Public Disclosure Act, introduced it in the legislature, and it was, with one exception, adopted the way we wrote it. And that one important exception has to do with the availability of the attorney-client privilege as an exemption from for a basis for exemption of certain records. But the rest of the law passed largely the way we wrote it. It was adopted unanimously by the House and by the Senate, ultimately, and signed into law by the governor. One feature of that law is that this office, the Attorney General's office, is required to draft a set of model rules. That is to say, more detailed prescriptions for how requesters and government agencies can be more successful at using the Public Disclosure Act. The rules are intended to be, as we draft them, a set of guidelines and best practices that will be available to local governments and state agencies to follow. They will not be mandatory, but they will be advisory, to help them be more successful at complying with requests and to help provide more guidance to requesters and how they can be more successful in making their requests. So we're interested in hearing from you tonight about what you think works and doesn't work in under the Public Disclosure Act. What do you think is good about it? What would you like to see improved or changed? Whether your perspective is that of a requester, or your perspective is that of an elected official, or a public information officer, or a county clerk. What do you see in the Act that works and that could stand improvement? And we expect that there will not always be agreement within this audience over what works and what doesn't work, and that's okay, because our goal is to produce a set of model rules that really reflects what works best, and to solve problems through really a consensus-oriented model that will help us avoid future litigation and avoid conflicts in the future by addressing some of the knotty problems, like what is the definition of a record in the context of an electronic record, for example, a database? How can governments index their records more effectively so that the public knows what records a government has and can ask for them specifically instead of asking or making very broad requests? So we're looking for suggestions on those and other topics that you may have brought with you tonight. Now, the way we're going to proceed tonight is that we have a certain number of speakers we lined up in advance, and I'm going to call them up in the order that we'd agreed on in advance, just to have them speak and provide perspectives from the government side and the requester side, from the media and from public requesters. And then we're going to go through the sign-in sheets. Now, if you haven't already signed in to speak and you would like to do so, I'd like to encourage you to sign in. Pam, sign-in sheets are still out at the table. So if you have not signed in to speak and you would like to, please go ahead and sign in. If you aren't planning to speak, but later on you are inspired to get up and speak, just pop on out. We'll collect the sign-up sheets throughout the evening, and we'll bring those in, and we'll just call people up in the order in which they signed in. We're going to ask, we're just going to have the first folks come up and speak, then we're going to ask everyone else to come up in order, and we're going to ask you to limit your comments to 3 minutes if possible. We aren't going to, ring a bell or sound a gong if you go over, but in fairness to everybody, to make sure we have an opportunity for everyone to speak and still meet our scheduled adjournment time of around 8:30. We'll hope that you'll try to limit your comments to about 3 minutes, and we may actually want to have a system for signaling time to help our speakers just keep track. I know when I speak, it's very unusual for a politician, I know, but we often lose track of time and talk too long. With that, I'd like to start introducing our speakers, and I'd like to thank our elected officials who are here tonight. The two that I know are here are Representative Derek Kilmer, 26th District. Derek, thank you very much for being here tonight. And Assessor Jim Avery is also here. Jim, where are you? There it is. And are there any other elected officials who are here tonight and we might have missed? Okay, very good. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see the hand. Where did I? Yes, ma'am.
Catherine Hall, North Kitsap School Board.
Very good. Thank you very much. Thanks for speaking. A lot of times, yes. Yes, ma'am.
Diane Robinson, City of Remington, District 6.
Thank you very much for being here, Councilman. We appreciate it. Thank you both for being here. And Derek and Jim, thank you as well. So the order in which we're going to take our speakers, we had five speakers arranged. I know three of them are here, and two of them I think maybe not are not here yet. But we're going to start with Arlene Moore from Kitsap County. Then we'll go to Julie McCormick from Kitsap Sun. We're going to hear from Charlie Burrow, citizen here in Kitsap County. And then we had two speakers who are not here yet. Is that correct? From SQUIM and Port Townsend. So we'll keep, you're not here, are you? All right. So we'll keep our eyes open for them, and we'll have them come up when they arrive. With that, Arlene, I'd like to turn the mic over to you. And if you could all, when you get up to speak, begin by just introducing yourself, what you do, just so everyone understands what your background is. That'd be great. Ellen?
Do I need a mic?
You swing around, if you'd like to kind of face down.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. My name is Arlene Moore. I work at Kitsap County in the Department of Administrative Services. One of my responsibilities is public disclosure, the requests that come through the county. I really wanted to take this opportunity to say who we are and that we are, available to you in any requests that you may have. I brought some business cards, and I want you to know that we do have forms out on our website, kitsapgov.com. If you don't have access to that, please call, and we'd be happy to help you in any way that we can. I think really for me to talk better on both sides or on our side of it is if I heard first the concerns or, what is out there, how people are feeling. So with that, I think I'll sit down and maybe wait towards the end.
That's fine.
Okay?
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to invite Julie McCormick to the mic. Julie is a senior reporter with Kitsap Sun.
I see a lot of familiar faces. Old public records requesters. I love public records. It's probably because I'm nosy. I'm also noisy. And I really believe that government should be open to the public, that the business of government should be open to the public. One of the first rules of journalism is to always get the name right, to spell it right. Public records are real helpful when you need to spell a name right. The second rule of journalism is to get the name of the dog. Oddly enough, you can find some really unique, compelling information in public records. The first rule of investigative journalism is never to go on fishing expeditions. We don't have time to go through mounds of paper looking for something that might be there. The second rule of investigative journalism is to ask for the broadest possible, is to submit the broadest possible request. The new law guarantees our right to get a response for a broad request and not be turned down because our request is too broad. As a reporter, I've had almost always good results from using public records, whether I have to request it from a department or whether it's just there for me to go look at. I've only had a very few unfortunate responses to requests for public documents. But I know that as a reporter, I get treated differently than ordinary citizens. It was an ordinary citizen, a frustrated, angry, obsessive ordinary citizen at the veterans' home at Retzel who had compiled huge numbers of boxes full of public documents. It was because that ordinary citizen was willing to share them with me that I was able to do a number of stories that generated widespread public knowledge about the superintendent, who was a little Napoleon, and also sexually harassing his employees. As a result of that, he was fired. It got the governor's attention, the fact that the newspaper was paying attention. It was an ordinary citizen who made that happen. His boss, by the way, resigned as a result of the scandal. So, I guess, the moral of the story is, I love public records. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm Charlie Burrow. I'm with Citizens Group, Kitsap Citizens for Responsible Planning. We've been involved with primarily county land use issues for about a dozen years. Very much have been a number of public record requests. I want to start out with suggestions of what could be done. And the Attorney General touched on one of them that I think is very important, and that is an index, a comprehensive index for the record. The Public Records Act requires agencies to maintain an index, but has a huge loophole that allows them not to by finding that it would be too burdensome to do so. With our computer capabilities now, I think we're close to the point where, for the most part, we can eliminate public records requests or the need for them by putting our information online, having a comprehensive index, so that anybody that was interested in records could find them for themselves. If any need some assistance and where to look, but we would relieve staff of the problem of sifting through knowledge of paper, trying to figure out what departments they were in, that sort of thing. And I think that would relieve the need for some of these amendments we just made, which are addressing the mechanics of sifting through paper and voluminous requests. Now, I think the Supreme Court decision was that caused the first action listed in your actions of prohibiting denial of overly broad requests was somewhat of a silly decision because it didn't really touch on the substance of records that were denied as a result of that decision. It's touched on procedures, and it seems to me that denying a public records request because it's already brought, all that's going to do is generate a bunch of smaller requests to produce the same thing, which is just going to increase the bureaucracy, the steps that you have to go through to get those records. And as a consequence of that, I think some of the other amendments here actually kind of go against the purpose of the first one by creating requirements for possibly having to put up a deposit in advance, breaking a large request into multiple requests. Each of those could require another step, a bureaucratic step that could take time, more shuffling of paper. Some of the elements of the new law I'm not familiar with, such as I had a question about what is the change in venue, what was the impact of that, what was it before? Why the change in the statute of limitations? And do you have any draft versions of a model? Of model overview, any proposal that you can share?
Okay, well, just quickly address those. We don't have a draft of model rules. We're at the beginning of the drafting process, and we're going to write the first draft based on input we receive at these forums. When the draft is completed, we'll publicize it so people can comment on the draft rule, and we'll factor in additional comments and then put out the final rule by beginning of February of next year.
Okay, the next person who signed in to testify is from the Kitsap County Association of Realtors, Mike Eliason. Mike?
Good evening. Mike Eliason, Government Affairs Director, Kitsap County Association of Realtors. Welcome back to Kitsap County. Last time, I think I saw you were on the campaign trail, so we're happy to have you here as Attorney General. I've had the pleasure over the past 20 years of serving in public office on three occasions. I've also been employed by government agencies to be a records retention officer, and now as Government Affairs Director for the Realtors, I've been in a position where I've been on both sides of the issue. And I want to make a couple comments, bits and pieces. Tom Donnelly addressed the issue of deposits. A suggestion, one of the things I do is it doesn't, by statute, it doesn't cost you anything to inspect records. It costs a public agency. It doesn't cost an applicant. So one suggestion, even though it's time consuming, is to turn in the request and just ask to inspect the records. They have to provide them to you. And again, it's a little more costly because not only do the records have to be produced by the government agency, but then typically the staff member has to sit there with you as you laboriously go through each public record. And then once you've gone through them, you can decide which of those records you want to have copied, and then you just turn in a request for those particular records. On the issue of providing the installment basis, I actually think that's helpful. In the fire district quite some time ago, had a request that was very broad, and then of course the statute allows you, if you can't comply within the statutory provision within 5 days, you just provide a written letter to the individual who requested the records and then tell them when you can provide it. But as I recall, there's no case law, or the statute doesn't provide exactly how many days that will be. It's actually up to the agency to provide it. So I think that will actually be of help. I think the biggest problem we have in Washington State is the enforcement end of it, the police power, mm-hmm. per se. We can create all the laws we want, but if you don't have a police power to enforce it, you have a problem. Let me give you an example. I spent 5 years in the state of Florida. Down there, there are a number of sunshine laws similar to California. They're very tough, very stringent. While I was there, the governor removed four of the five county commissioners in a large county, and based on the sunshine laws in the state. And what had happened was that there was a violation, basically, of a statute similar to our Open Public Meetings Act. It was a phone conversation with the county supervisor of elections and two county commissioners, and based on that, they were removed from office. About the same time, there was a school director. And down there in Florida, the school districts are a little bit different than here. Like in Kitsap, as Catherine can tell you, we're divided. We have several in the county. Down there, it's one county school board, one county superintendent that's elected. And there was a public records request turned in, and the school director did not respond to it. The individual filed suit in court. The county prosecutor actually filed charges against the elected official for not complying with the request, was sentenced to 30 days in jail for not complying. I don't think we have that in the state of Washington. In fact, to my recollection, even on the Open Public Meetings Act, it would cost you thousands of dollars if you found a violation of OPMA, but the maximum you can get against an elected official is a $100 civil penalty. So I would like to see the Attorney General work on enforcement mechanisms, maybe put together a panel, look at other states, see what's working, what's not working, and give the public some type of police power in that regard. And then last thing, on the Index of Public Records, if I remember correctly, many agencies still have the ability to pass a resolution and then declare themselves exempt from providing an index. Now, I haven't seen any numbers to see how many agencies actually provide an index. There's a number of issues. Charlie mentioned a few related to that. But I'd be interested to know how many agencies have actually filed for the exemption not to provide an index.
Almost all of them.
I speak from experience. I know we did, but we were a small fire district and didn't have the capability to do it.
There are some good, very good reasons that some of them do so. But yeah,
great. Thank you,
Mike. Thank you for being here tonight. Mary Dombrowski is the next person who signed to testify. Mary. And she'll be followed by Mr. Dick Davis from Port Orchard.
Thank you. My name is Mary Dombrowski, and I come as a private citizen who is also a historical researcher and filmmaker, and so my interest is in the older records. I'm excited about the idea of having an indexing system, and also I would add a note of caution in that I think of the library system and what they did in converting their whole system to books online, information online, and throwing the card catalogs out the window. And when you have those old paper records, there are clues for researchers in the typography, in the pencil marks, and the fingerprints that get lost. So my hope would be that in converting things to an indexing system online, that we don't lose the paper records. And I know this is going on because about 10 years ago, I myself had the opportunity to be at the assessor's office and looking at records from the 40s on an old military fort, and the clerk, who was very kind to us, said, oh, well, just here, take this photograph of your house from 1930 because we're not using these anymore. So she gave me the photograph. Well, I treasure it, but I believe that those kinds of public records should be available to everyone and should not be just thrown out when we're converting to that. And I would hope that the older records, going back as early as the state owns them, would be put online and indexed so that we can see them, but archiving the originals.
Very good.
Thanks.
Mary, thank you very much. Mr. Dick Davis.
Here comes the skunk to the garden party. Thank you, Attorney General, for being here. I wanted to ask a couple questions that are kind of outside the inside baseball discussion that's gone on so far. On its face, open records sound like a good idea, but I think we all know there is no free lunch. How much consideration was given to the costs and resources county and state agencies will have to commit to come into compliance? And do you propose to offer any financial assistance to help them comply? If not, shouldn't we look upon this action as another unfunded mandate from the state that further burdens our county's budget? And secondly, we live in a litigious and increasingly distrustful society. Do you have any concerns that widening access to public records is an invitation to frivolous lawsuits against public agencies for every T they fail to cross or every I they fail to dot? And do you think this broad scrutiny of public employees will have a chilling effect on how they perform their duties and might even drive good employees away from public service? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Those are great questions, and they deserve to be addressed. Let me try to work back up through the list. That'd be handy, actually. Should have written it down as when he started. But so I'm gonna start, and then I'll ask Scott and Greg to jump in as they see fit. Thank you. First, I think it's useful to consider the history of the act that we're here to discuss tonight. The Public Disclosure Act was a product of citizen initiative and was adopted by a pretty wide margin by popular vote in the early 1970s. So what we're here talking about tonight is not a new law. The public made a decision that they are willing to bear the costs of complying with Disclosure Act requests, with records requests, and to have open public meetings back when they adopted the initiative that created the Public Disclosure Act in, I think it was 1973. Do I have that
right? Correct.
In 73. So what we did in the bill does not make this compliance with the act or operation of the act more expensive. To the contrary, we believe that some of the steps we took in the act will actually reduce litigation and make it easier for local governments to comply and at a lower cost. For example, by eliminating the overbreadth basis for denying requests, which was created, in my view, out of whole cloth by the Supreme Court in 2004, we took away an inevitable source of litigation. There's no question that there was going to be more litigation over the Public Disclosure Act because the court didn't define how broad is too broad. And so that would have to be established through litigation in a series of court cases, which, frankly, I would rather avoid. We also helped address resource issues for all governments, state, county, and city, by allowing, for example, agencies to comply with larger requests in installments, to turn those documents over as they're produced. Because once in a while, not very often, but once in a while, and every local government can tell this tale, you'll get a request for a very large number of documents. You'll go to all the trouble putting them together, and they never get picked up. So they never get paid for. By providing, all the heads are shaking from the folks from local government. Now, I say it's rare in terms of as a percentage of overall requests, but it does happen, and most governments have experienced it. The Act allows the records to be produced in installments and handed over in good faith. It's not an excuse for delay or stalling. But in the event that you've produced the first box of documents and they never get picked up, and the person doesn't call back, then you've got a reasonable basis for saying, well, maybe they don't intend to pick up the rest of them either. And you can help put a stop to those harassing requests very, very early on. Secondly, for very large requests, the deposit requirement of 10%, which I expect most agencies are not going to bother with because most requests just aren't that big. But when there is a very large request involving thousands of pages, the 10% deposit is kind of a down payment. It's earnest money, if you will, that will help protect governments as well. Now, you raised a couple of additional issues, which I think are very, very important. You asked whether we have concerns that widening access to public records is an invitation to frivolous lawsuits against public agencies. I don't think so. First of all, we've had the Public Disclosure Act for 30 years. So I don't think we've done anything in the bill that we sponsored and was adopted by Representative Kilmer and his colleagues to increase the odds or the chances for frivolous litigation against the state. In fact, by reducing the statute of limitations, so to speak, from 5 years to 1 year, we think we'll actually cut down on frivolous lawsuits. That was an important change brought to us by agencies that have to deal with requests as a way to help address the problem of, again, not very common, but occasionally there is a fishing expedition by an enterprising attorney looking to gin up some work. So we think that that change will help reduce the odds of that occurring. As far as broad scrutiny of public employees, nothing in the bill that we sponsored increases scrutiny of public employees to a wider extent than already existed under the Public Disclosure Act. And, you know, frankly, I think that all of us in public employment expect a certain amount of scrutiny. We understand that there is going to be scrutiny. We fill out those F-1s, right, those Public Disclosure Act forms, either because we're required to by state law or sometimes by local law, and we have to disclose where our income comes from and so forth. So we know that there's going to be more scrutiny when we work for the public. But I don't think that what we're doing here will increase the scrutiny or have a chilling effect. If I'm wrong about that, I'd like to hear from public employees. But those issues have not yet been raised to my attention as a result of the bill that we wrote and was adopted last year. So that's my response to the very good questions that you raised. Dick, thank you very, very much for taking the time to write them out for us. Obviously, you put some thought into this, and I really appreciate it. Any other comments? Scott?
No, I'll just say that I think, I mean, they are public records, and I believe that the public does not want to hear or be told that the cost, they cannot be provided or maintained because of the cost involved. I think the public wants to know that, and with reasonable safeguards, that we would err on the side of, the government would err on the side of openness. And I think the most affordable way to provide records is not to fight to keep them secret. And I think if the culture of openness is indeed a genuine one, then I think the cost is not something the public is willing to bear.
I'd like to add just two thoughts. First of all, take a large state agency, the largest there is, that would be DSHS. They have several billion dollars a year passed through DSHS. They have 13,000 employees.
18,000
employees. the Department of Social and Health Services did a study, and they calculated that they spend $1.4 million a year responding to public records requests. Well, a couple thoughts. $1.4 million out of 5 or 10 billion, I don't know the number, I'm sorry, several billion. And the second thought is that if there is public scrutiny that is allowed and is possible because of access to public records, a mistake that DSHS might make could easily cost the state taxpayers $1.4 million. And if you catch one mistake because there was a culture of openness at DSHS and also because somebody perhaps found a particular problem with public records, I think you would end up actually saving money. As far as the chilling effect on employees, another bill passed this session that we supported, it passed unanimously, that exempts from disclosure public employees' personal cell phone numbers, home email addresses, things like that. Nobody wants or needs that sort of information about public employees. So there are some safeguards out there, and we're looking at that too.
Now, we didn't have anyone else who signed in check off the box indicating they wanted to testify, so let me just throw it open. Is there anyone here who has not testified yet who would like to do so? Just raise your hand, and we'll just invite you up to the microphone. Okay, we'll start here in front, and we'll go back here.
Thank you. My name is Tom Nevins. I'm from Paulsbow. There may be a skunk in the room, and I may be another skunk. I'm not sure, but there are many people in this room today who have signed very broad non-disclosure agreements, confidentiality agreements. I'm sure that there are appropriate uses for those things, but when you're a public employee or an elected official, in my opinion, the reason I'm here tonight is it serves to take away the sunshine and cast a feeling of mistrust on public officials that they might not deserve, that they could avoid had they not done this. So in your rulemaking in the future, I would hope that the rule could be as simple as decline to sign these kinds of agreements. Thank you.
Tom,
you don't need to comment on this because I understand there may be some.
I understand that non-disclosure agreements have been somewhat of an issue in Kitsap County recently, so it's something we're learning more about. I just want to say that in my 10 years of public service, including my time on the King County Council, I never saw a non-disclosure or confidentiality agreement outside of a legal settlement context, which, of course, is a special case. I think they are fairly rare in the public sector, but my curiosity about them has peaked, and we're going to do some more research to see what we can find out about how prevalent their use is across the state. So thank you very much for raising the issue. Sir, in the blue shirt, and then we'll come back to... come on up. Go ahead and come on up towards the mic if you want to be ready for the next one. Go ahead, sir.
My name is George Warrington.
Go ahead and pull that whole arm down. There you go.
My name is George Warrington. I'm just a common citizen. I'm not well aware of all the implications and impacts that government gets involved with, but this is like a new area that we're entering into, and I appreciate the time in the meeting explaining a little bit about what's going on. But I'm looking at this thing of lessons learned. There was a lot of questions about indexing and cataloging and stuff like this. Now, other states, Oregon and Idaho, are similar in population to Washington State. California might be excluded because of its size and population. But perhaps as this organization looked at the other states and seen what lessons learned they have got out of that information, maybe cut down some of the paper chasing and trying to decide what we're going to do based on problems from other states who have already had stuff implicated.
If we can avoid reinventing the wheel, we would be very happy to do so. And so as we talk to technology vendors through a kind of RFP process, we're interested in knowing what they're hearing around the country. I don't know if you've done any research beyond that yet, Greg, or not. But
you know, so many of the other states' laws are so different, it's hard to apply them to ours. But Rob makes a great point about the technology. That's where we can find out about some very practical things that other states are doing.
Okay, I just want to make a point about maybe lessons learned from other areas. It sounds like that every state is so much different, and it's unfortunate that everything is so different from every state.
Yeah.
And I would think that people would have the same thinking in every state, but maybe I'm incorrect on
that.
No,
that's a good point, and we should be looking around the country for examples of success that we can emulate, and that would include examples of the successful application of technology, for example. So you raise a good point. It's George, right?
Yes, it is.
You raise a good point, and the more we work on this, the more we're going to be reaching out to other governments and using state and national associations of elected officials to find out what's working elsewhere and what good ideas exist out there.
Okay, appreciate your time.
Thank you, George, very, very much for being here. Sir.
My name's Ben Holland, and I'm the Director of Admin Services at Kitsap County. But I wanted to point out I had signed a non-disclosure agreement with the state. So there
so
are
what was the context,
plenty of
Ben?
Those. Sales tax information.
Yeah, because there are certain agreement tax information which law does not allow to be disclosed
right.
about
and,
taxpayers.
And that's what I'm saying. So, there's lots yeah. of non-disclosure agreements mm-hmm. out there, some of them required by law. So, mm-hmm. But I could not get sales tax information, the kind of sales tax information we need to do our job without that kind of and medical records. I
sure,
HIPAA are all
and,
that way
yeah.
too. So.
Good, good point, Ben.
Say.
And it shows you my perspective as an elected official and your perspective of the guy who's actually getting the work done in the government. So thank you. Other comments? Yes, yes, sir, right here. And then, Mike, you're welcome to come up afterwards. Go ahead, sir. Come on forward.
My name's Richard Nerf. I'm from Bremerton. I'm naive about the record requests and that sort of thing, but when I hear of boxes of documents coming mm-hmm. out, and I think it's unlikely that more than one or two of those actually has information that is of use to the person who's requesting them, and because of an interest in sustainability, I just look at the trees and I cringe. But I'm also a person, although I'm always worked with computers, I really like to read paper rather than looking at it on a screen. So I'm kind of in a balance here. I think in the future, there are going to be automated ways to look at documents. I mean, the equivalent of your Yahoo right. on your desktop. So getting records into machine-readable form is important, I think, for saving the trees. I don't know whether this was a practical idea or not, but perhaps when copies of paper records are made, they could also be digitized at the same time so that you would never have to rehandle that piece of paper again, that there would be, you could regenerate copies off the electronic form if needed, and if not needed, then a CD or something like that could be handed over rather than a box of records.
That's, Mr. Nerf, you're absolutely right. And more document requests are complied with. Documents are provided on electronic media like CDs. And in fact, the case that kind of prompted my own thinking about the Public Disclosure Act and the need for this bill last year, the Hangartner case, involved two agencies, one of which was the Seattle Monorail Authority, and they had turned over all but the disputed documents on CD, and that's how they complied with the rest of the request. The lawsuit boiled down to some documents they did not hand over, citing attorney-client privilege. So that is happening, and since almost all documents today are created electronically and then printed out, what you're suggesting should be possible. So we're looking for those solutions, and interested in how we can all be more successful in taking advantage of that technology.
Thank you.
So thank you very much. Mike, did you want to offer an additional comment?
My apologies. I had some afterthoughts, and I'm on my soapbox tonight. And by the way, I'm speaking on my own behalf right now. I don't want to get trouble back at the office. First, I wanted to mention, I think it's probably been several years now, but I believe the Washington Newspaper Association conducted a survey. And what they did is they took a standard request form and submitted it to a whole bunch of agencies around the state. And they asked for a pretty basic request. I think it was a contract for perhaps school superintendent, employment agreement. Pretty obvious, it should be disclosed. And if I remember, the responses were varied, but it was surprising how many of their records retention officers did not want to provide it. When the request came in, they'd call the applicant and say, what's the purpose of your request, which they shouldn't be asking for in the first place. But there, I guess my point is, I think there needs to be a public education process for the records retention officers. And I'm not sure where we are or how much you have in your budget at the AG's office to do that, but that might be something you might consider doing. Because I think, I'm not too much into the conspiracy theories. I think there's some of that. But I think the biggest part of it is basically people that are overworked in government agencies. If the agency's larger, they have a hard time tracking down the records. We found in Kitsap County, because we have, 1,300 employees, I believe. When a request comes in, sometimes it has to go to multiple departments. It takes time. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that. The other issue I wanted to bring up is the staff being a conduit for decisions. In my opinion, I've seen more and more over the past decade where staff members will approach an elected official on a body and say, here's where we'd like to go, what we'd like to do, and then they solicit comments back as a feedback process. Now, that's fine. Then they go to the second member of the body and they approach it the same way. Now, if they present it the same to get feedback, I think that's okay. The problem is when the staff member then becomes the conduit for the decision and says, well, I just met with Commissioner A, and Commissioner A wants to go this way. What do you think? Now they're participating in a decision, and now we have a violation of the Open Public Meetings Act. So I think we need to pay attention to that, and I think staff needs to be careful not to get caught up into that for the sake of expediency and that type of thing. And third, I don't know that we can do much about this, but I think we're kidding ourselves if we think that elected officials will travel as when a quorum is present to a conference. For example, if they travel from Western Washington to Spokane, 6 or 8 hour trip together in a vehicle, do we really think they're spending that whole time talking about riding Harleys or gardening? I can't help but think they're talking about some things leading up to a potential decision. And I think many of you know when you attend public meetings, you see there's not much discussion and the decision's made. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out they had to be in some type of conduit among them to reach the decision they did. Thank you.
Mike, thank you very much. Those were good additional issues to bring up. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Phyllis Harris. I came here because this was about public records. And I'm coming in the face of personal records. I don't know if it's out of the place of this forum or not, but each one of us have personal records that we need to account for, and many times we can't get copies of personal records. For instance, in my case, I've been looking for my children for many, many years, asking for records that tell me where my children are. I cannot find them because the Privacy Act. That, I think, needs to be an issue that somewhere, somehow, along the lines of our lives, we need to say goodbye, Privacy Act. It's time to be unprivate and be family again, per se, in that respect. Because not to be able to find public records as to the death of someone, as to the birth of someone, as to all of those things that are very important in family life. I don't know if that's out of context of your evening's forum, but I just had to say that because it's important to me.
Thank you very much for taking the time to do that. Thank you. Other comments? Yes, sir.
I'm John Nance. I'm from Poulsbo. And I've had some of the same problems that the previous speaker has doing genealogy searches. I worked for the Navy here for a number of years and on environmental projects where we had lots of reports, lots of test data, all regarding cleanups. And one of the things we did was early on was start to digitize everything, mainly so you can find the information. A lot of times you have different contractors that do follow-on work, and you want to give the initial study to this contractor for the next step. And it's a heck of a lot better when you can just email it to them instead of make Xerox copies. But in Olympia, there's a lot of lawyers, and they like paper. I know electronic is nice, but it's not exactly the same as the paper. I still have some really nice Multimate files, WordPerfect 2.0, and some Word 2.0. Unfortunately, yeah, you can't read it. And even if you had the most current word processor and you print it on your printer, it's not necessarily going to be identical to this person that created it with that same word processor, because he may have used one brand of printer and yours might be something different. And what's going to happen is the lines won't come out the same. Having said that, you should not give up on electronic. It doesn't have to be, I feel, exact. And it needs to be smart, vice dumb. And I'm talking like Adobe, the earlier Adobe files, I call dumb files. You can't do word searches. So just because you don't have a solution today and you want to study, don't wait. Just forge ahead. Get something that works so a person can do Google searches. You know, it's not rocket science. And for individuals, we want information. We want it in a timely manner, not in a month. And we want it at no cost. And if a person gets something digitally, if you really, really want it exact, then you can go down and get a paper copy. Otherwise, I would say forge ahead and do it electronic, even if it isn't perfect. That's
my opinion. Thank you, Mr. Nance. Good comments. Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Well, you have all been extremely patient tonight in a rather warm room, and I thank you for that very, very much. Let me ask if Scott has any final comments to offer.
I'd just like to say that one thing I've noticed from looking out over this group is that you're a group that represents a wide range of political views, probably party affiliations, and philosophical views on a lot of issues. This is one issue that I think is certainly one that reaches across those differences. You know, whether you're with a conservative or a liberal group or some other definition, you can find that you want to know that you can count on the records and access to information from your government, and that's something I think that's really good to see, because so many times people on different sides of political spectrums are not united by much of anything else. So thank you.
Very good. Scott, thank you again for the paper's involvement and involvement in this evening, but also your great involvement in this issue. Really appreciate it. Well, if you go home tonight and you're getting ready for bed or brushing your teeth and say, I could have said, I got good news for you. You can offer comments after tonight for the next several months online from home or at the library. Go to the Attorney General homepage, atg.wa.gov, and you'll find, just navigate through, you'll find a place there for you to offer comments to us online. Also, there are forms here out front, so grab a form on the way out if you'd like, and if you'd like to
write it down and do it the old-fashioned way, put pen to paper. Go ahead and take a form, and you can mail it back to us. Is there, I don't know if there's a fax number on there or not. Is there, Janelle?
There's a mailing address.
Okay, so on the form, you'll see instructions for mailing a completed form to us or to email us your comments. So we hope that you'll consider doing that as well and encourage friends, family, neighbors, colleagues to do the same. We'd like their input as well, even if they could not be here tonight. I want to thank Representative Kilmer for being here again tonight. Our Jim, thank you from the assessor's office for being here tonight. And wait a minute, where's my list? There it is, sorry. I was scribbling on it. Okay. Our school board member, thank you very much for being here from Paulsbo, right? And our Bremerton City Council member, Diane, right? Thank you very much for being here tonight. Thank you all for participating and for your interest in this issue, and keep those cards and letter coming, as they say. Thank you again.
Thank you.